Season 12 of Movie Our Minute, the daily podcast, where we dig our way through the 1994 movie The Shawshank Redemption, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Heather Baxendale of Word of Hellmouth. Welcome back once again, Heather.
Thank you for having me back. I am so excited to be here, as always.
Yes, always fun having you on. That goes without saying.
Yes.
All right, so minute 43 begins with...
We hardly get into any trouble at all.
No, not yet. Not yet. We're moving there. We're moving in that direction, but we're not there yet. So minute 43 begins with Andy asking for an item from Red and ends with Andy starting to back away from his captors. So we ended things yesterday with Andy doing something that probably both you and I know it bothers me, but it probably bothers you too when someone interrupts you in the middle of a movie. Don't talk to me. Don't bother me in the middle of the movie.
Mm-hmm. Can you see that? Even if it's something I've watched multiple times, yes, it's like nails on a chalkboard. It's awful. Not my best self in those moments.
Yeah. That's right. My wife drives me crazy, and it drives her crazy at the same time when she'll like start talking to me, not realizing that I'm, you know, watching something, and then I'll say what, and you know, and I always tell her just tell me to pause. I will pause, and then I will talk. You know.
See, that's all I'm asking for. Give me a second to pause, and I specifically my 9-year old. What I tell him is, I care about what you have to say, and I want to listen. If you continue to talk while my attention is fixated elsewhere, I'm not going to listen to what you're saying.
That's right. 100%.
And he's actually gotten really good about it. Yeah. Yeah. That's it. I would love to give you my attention, but also.
That's right. Makes sense. So Andy is in the movie theater interrupting Red and the rest of Red's cohorts. As they're watching Rita Hayworth toss her hair back, because that's the biggest thrill these guys can get at this point. And basically, Andy continues talking to him because now he's waited for, you know, for the scene to happen so that Red can hoop and holler like everyone else watching Rita Hayworth toss her hair just like that. Because I guess that's what you can get from a movie from the 1940s.
I still think it's imagination. Pretty great.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there is something very, even though there's not, this is like actually something that I think filmmakers now could probably learn from. There is still something very sensual and very sexual about her character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's a beautiful woman anyway, but the way that she carries herself and presents herself, I love that the hair flip is a moment. I wish we had more of those kinds of moments, like the Charlie's Angels with their hair flowing in the background. You know, those subtleties, they impact us and we remember them. So, yeah, I get it. Even if they weren't, you know, stuck in prison with a bunch of dudes.
That's right. Well, that's the reason why they do it. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the idea of the sex symbol, you know, that's right, to make the viewer want something, you know. And they do it for women, too, by showing a lot of men showing off their pecs, you know, the same way.
Yes. Not even that. Sometimes it's a little more innocuous, even the way that a man is dressed or carries himself. Correct. I find, like, a perfect example that is, like, Han Solo. We don't see his body ever. But right. Is there a man that's more sexy and confident than Han Solo? Maybe Indiana Jones. Also, we do get to see a little bit of his chest, though.
That's true.
I'm going on a Harrison Ford adventure.
Especially, yes. Especially in Temple of Doom.
Yes. No complaints for me. Harrison Ford forever. He's my number one.
Okay, I can understand that. Even though I know you like John McClane.
Yeah.
Yeah, but. You get chest also there.
Yeah. See? You don't have to show it all, guys. Or ladies. Leave some to the imagination.
There
It's
you go.
fun too.
Well, again, that's one of the whole things with movies that came out during the time that movies were being censored, you know, in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, is that, you know, they wanted people to, they did things to help people use their imagination. Let's put it that way. As opposed to, you didn't need to show, or you weren't allowed to show, so you would do things in a way to make people say, oh, well, you know, where can my mind go from there? You know, that type of thing. Which, again, this is a perfect example of it.
The imp
You know, exactly.
the implication, indeed.
That's right. And then Andy says to Red, he goes, I understand you're a man that knows how to get things. So I find it very funny that they have this callback to the exact same line used 2 years earlier, you know, between the two of them. It's more of it feels here like a friendly jibe between the two of them.
Yes. I feel like there's just a more natural back and forth between the two of them at this point. There's clearly, the word I was going to use is intimacy, but I do think that that works. Because in friendship, that's really what it is. You can be playful in that way, and
That's
that's
right.
intimacy.
That's
So
right.
yeah, there's definitely that connection between the two of them. And just in this interaction, you can see that they have that banter and
Yes.
that friendship that they've developed at this point.
Correct. And I mean, one of the things that people say about this movie is that it's a platonic love story between the two of them. And this definitely
Yes.
goes and shows that. You know, because they become the closest of friends. You know, so it works. And Red looks back at him
I
and
love that, and I especially I think that maybe I think you just hit the nail on the head with why this is so many men's favorite movie is it is that friendship and that ability for the two of them to, because especially in the 90s still, like we were not going to talk about male feelings and being vulnerable to each other and that kind of thing. It's something we're still working through right now. So I think that this is a way for you to kind of experience that and feel okay about it too. I love that.
okay, that works. And Red then playfully responds to him and goes, yeah, I'm known to look at certain things from time to time. What do you want? And Andy looks up at the screen and goes, Rita Hayworth. And Red goes, what? And Andy said, can you get her? And then we're once again shown on the screen to Johnny too. So this is Johnny Farrell. I've heard a lot about you, Johnny. And Red then turns to Red and goes, well, Red then turns to Andy and goes, it'll take a few weeks. And Andy goes, weeks? So we see that Andy is quite antsy at this point. And
Yes.
it's very funny because Red could get the wrong impression here. You know,
In what way?
the impression is that if someone wants a poster of a sexy woman at this time when he's in prison, yeah, he probably wants to use it for some type of fantasy.
Oh, yes.
That
Yes.
would be,
Andy has other plans,
that's
though.
right.
Yeah, you're right.
That would be the, I guess, normal impression that one would think at this point. Because what other reason would someone want a picture of a sexy, beautiful woman on their wall at in a prison? In a
And
prison.
100%, and you're right. And in fact, that's got to be what Andy's banking on everyone to assume.
Oh, of course. Of course.
Yeah, that's the whole idea. That is it right there. You're absolutely right.
Right. But I mean, we know, again, after having seen the whole movie, we know why Andy wants it as soon as possible because he now has this clay that has broken off on his wall. You know, he wants to be able to cover it up as
How long
quickly as
do you,
possible.
what do you think that the gap in time was from him realizing that the clay was so malleable when he wrote his name on there with the chisel or hand, whatever it was, and this scene here? Do you think that it happened right afterwards that he realized it immediately, or do you think that there's been a passage
There
of
has to be a
time?
passage of time because when we talked about it earlier this week, Andy was in his cell and it was lights out. So there's no way of Andy getting out of his cell to go to Red at that point. But on the other hand, why didn't he talk to Red at all during the course of the day? You know, why did he wait until they're watching a movie? Because my assumption is this is not, they're not showing the matinees. You know, this is something that's going to happen at night. So whatever, again, they didn't see each other that during that, the course of that day, I guess. You know, Andy was too busy in the laundry, and Red was too busy wherever he was. You know, I don't know. But my assumption is that
this I'm just thinking, because I think you're right that there's a sense of urgency.
To me, it's the next day. You know, there's
okay.
Yeah, you know, again, there's no way of knowing. And Andy goes, weeks? And Red goes, well, yeah, Andy. I don't have her stuffed down the front of my pants right now. I'm sorry to say. But I'll get her. Relax. Now, what's very funny is that when you're originally watching this movie, when he's asking for Rita Hayworth, you're thinking to yourself he wants him to smuggle the real Rita Hayworth in. You're not thinking about it as a poster. And that's the impression.
Yeah. The way he words it, that's what it sounds right. like.
But
yeah.
again, it's I guess it's prison slang. It's the idea that, okay, you know, when I refer to, you know, a famous person, I'm talking about a picture. You know, that makes sense, that type of impression with that whole thing.
It also, you're right. Also, it also infers that this is a common thing that other inmates ask for. If he's going to be like, get me Rita Hayworth. So it makes sense too, that not only is that what he's asking for, that, like you said, there's this unsaid thing between them that they both understand, but also it makes it that much more common for him to have such a poster in his cell.
Now, I want to read a paragraph from the book on page 61. And again, the book is only 72 pages, so this is towards the end. This is the point where Red is explaining his thoughts on what actually happened, right? So it says, I believe now that it began in 1949, way back then, not with the rock hammer, but with the Rita Hayworth poster. I told you how nervous he seemed when he asked for that, nervous and filled with suppressed excitement. At the time, I thought it was just embarrassment, that Andy was the sort of guy who'd never want someone else to know that he had feet of clay and wanted a woman, even if it was only a fantasy woman. But I think now that I was wrong. I think now that Andy's excitement came from something else altogether. So, I mean, the book does allude to the fact that, you know, that this was being used, you know, posters were being used to alleviate sexual frustration. You know, and that it was a common thing that was what was known that guys would do. But it's interesting that in the book, the narrator Red basically is saying, you know, I misunderstood the nervousness. The nervousness really is the fact that, you know, he has, you know, that he has a hole that's starting to form, not that he wants to have a picture of a fantasy woman on the wall. But I do like the fact that in the quote here, it says he had feet of clay. I love the way that that he uses that, because again, it's clay that has basically, you know, come off of the wall.
Yes. Yes. Oh, so yes. Brilliant.
I like the way that they present that to us, both in the book and in the movie, that we see that Andy seems very excited to be able to get this poster. And you don't necessarily know what the purpose is.
No, because it feels out of character. And like you said in the novella, reading that part, which I'm really glad you shared, it indicates that even Red was, you know, like, this is whatever. But okay, it's probably because he's embarrassed. So you're having that inner monologue.
Red's in the business. Pardon? That's what he's bringing stuff in for they talk about, you know, he's bringing dirty playing cards and you bring in, you know, other pornography and stuff like that people wanted at the time, stuff like that. So it makes sense.
Yeah. It all of it does. It's brilliantly masked by everyone. and in particular Andy. And it also gives reason for him to be behaving
Yes.
somewhat out of character. And he's been, like you said, it's been a couple years now too. And they've been watching this movie repeatedly. All of that leads to making sense that he's finally like getting to the point of frustration where he'd be like, yeah, I would like this
Exactly.
Ipsy poster of the beautiful lady. And it's his friend, so who else is he? He's at least comfortable enough to talk to him about it too. I mean, yeah, it all adds
And
up.
then Andy gets up and blocks the view of a bunch of guys as he's walking back out of the theater, and then we still see the screen in the back. Again, an amazing shot because the shot is from the back of the crowd, basically. So we see Andy in front, walking and blocking people's view as he's trying to get out there. And we see on the screen, Rita Hayworth says, "It was a surprise, Mr. Farrell." And then Glenn Ford says it was. And then people start getting a little upset at Andy because he sort of pauses as he's trying to leave. He's still looking at the screen. And someone goes, "Sit down." And then we hear.
Well, like you said, they don't get to do this too often. This is a reward, potentially a reward for good behavior or whatever else. This is their one escape from reality, and they get to see this beautiful woman live. They don't want him messing that up. Also, I would probably yell at him to
That
sit
I
down too,
definitely would. Yeah.
without all of
Correct.
those
And then
extras.
we continue to hear what's going on, see what's going on the screen. "Did you tell him what I'm doing here?" "No, I want to save that as a surprise too." And then we hear, hang out your hat, Mr. Farrell." And Andy leaves the theater, and we see that he has a huge smile on his face.
Yeah, his
That's right.
plan is coming together.
He knows that he's found a way to try to begin his escape from prison. Even though I'm assuming he doesn't know at this point how long it's going to take him, but still, it still works. And as he's walking in the hallway, he gets ambushed, and we see that there's four guys that grab him. Unlike the three that we've seen before, we saw three, but this time there seems to be four. And they take him and they drag him inside the projection room. It's an interesting way for them to show this, because again, we'll talk about this very shortly about some strange things that are going on here. But the idea is that the sisters have found a way that they want to once again get back at Andy and try to get him. So do you think when do you think they started using projection rooms for in movies?
Oh, I have no idea.
What would be your guess?
None. No guess. The
No,
twenties,
it was actually
thirties.
between the it was in the aughts, in the you know the up until like 1910. So up until then. Sure.
Yeah,
Right.
because they did
Well,
silent
originally
movies.
the original film projectors were hand cranked. So they had to be in the room with the audience as you're using them. And then once they started creating better technology, so like in the 1910s, they started having projection booths, and it actually became I guess law or rule that they needed to use them. Because the film itself was made of nitrate, and it would quite often catch on.
Oh,
That's right,
yeah,
it would catch on
flammable.
fire, so therefore it needed to be in a separate room.
Yes.
Then starting in that's right. Then starting
Extremely
in the
flammable.
1930s, they began to build projection rooms that would have different type of lighting systems and. The idea of the projectionist being able to to switch multiple reels and stuff like that. In the 70s, when they started opening up multiplexes, so the idea was is that you can actually use the same room for multiple movie theaters. So you'd have different windows on different sides of the room in order to okay, you have on the right-hand side you have theater number one, and on the center theater number two, and on the left-hand side theater number three, And you can then, put different, you can have the same person manning the projection room at the same time and use multiple and have multiple showings at the same time also. And then once they started in the digital era, that really changed things a lot, because in the digital era, everything's basically no longer on reels. Everything's on, hard drives and digital files and stuff like that. So it's not as necessary to have them, but they still found ways to you still want to project it from a distance so that it'll show up on the screen that way, stuff like that. So it's very cool the way that they do that. And so these guys are doing their best to really manhandle Andy as he's doing this type of stuff. It's an interesting way that they're showing things. It's funny that if you look in the background, the fourth guy is basically looking around to make sure that nobody's nobody's gonna try and stop them or follow them. Like, you have three guys that are grabbing him, and the fourth guy is the lookout, I guess.
Which tells you that they've thought about this to some degree. This wasn't just a impulsive moment where they saw Andy alone. They thought about doing this and they planned it
Okay,
to some
but we
degree
did
at
talk about the
least.
fact that it seems as if Andy spontaneously has shown up to talk to Red. So that's a little strange also that they would do that.
That's true, but maybe they saw him there or they had already followed him there
Maybe.
and discussed it while he was in
Maybe they would.
there
Maybe.
and the opportunity. Yeah, I don't, I mean, I don't think they planned like ahead a week or so, but it does feel like there was some level of, hey, I see an opportunity, let's take advantage of it now. And also, like you said, they have the fourth
Which
guy
I
too,
think,
so.
if I notice properly, I think the fourth guy stays outside.
Yeah, I think you're right.
So that's why, because in a little while, I think tomorrow we'll see that there's only three guys. So yeah, right.
Yeah, I think he goes out with
It
the
could be. It could be.
projectionist. I
It
might be
could be.
wrong about that, but I think he
Right.
steps
And then
out with the
Boggs,
projectionist.
turns to the projectionist and goes, "Take a walk." And the projectionist, who's played by an actor named Joe Picoraro. He has 12 IMDb credits, and his nickname was or is Joe Peck. And he goes, "But I gotta change the reel." And Boggs just looks at him and goes, "I said walk off." And he screams the word walk as he's saying it to him. And the projectionist realizes that there's no reason for him to stick around here. But to me, it's a very strange thing that at this point, isn't gonna aren't there gonna isn't there gonna be a room full of guys that are going to be very curious as to why the movie stopped?
Yes, that's what I was thinking, but and I agree with that, but I also wonder about, Boggs, he's not very smart. He's impulsive and violent and he's extremely insecure. Anytime his power is challenged, he acts irrationally. He's not a thinker. He's definitely not a planner, which does kind of make sense that maybe this wasn't planned ahead a long way ahead, but saw the opportunity and
Okay.
decided to act on it. So yeah, maybe that was just his temper getting the best of him because he is kind of an idiot. He's not, we
Right.
see Andy outsmart him. We will see more on
Yes.
that coming up also. But that's the only thing that makes sense to me. Anyway, I haven't come up with another reason for that because my inclination was the same as yours. Why would you do that? You have them all distracted. They're also making a ton of noise. So whatever you're about to do, you can be louder about and nobody's going to hear you because everybody's yelling and hooting and hollering at the screen.
And usually, how much film time, I guess you could say, was on a reel? Like, how often do you think they need to change the reels in movies at that time?
I don't know. I would guess like two, three, maybe four, depending on the length of the
No,
movie.
but how much time? Meaning, do you think each reel
Oh.
is an hour, or is it a half hour?
30 minutes, maybe. Yeah, I would guess 30 minutes, 30 minutes to an hour
Okay,
max,
so
I would guess.
they usually were between 15 and 20 minutes.
Oh, wow. That's often.
And they would have what were known as cue marks or motor cues that would appear on the screen that you would it would give you it would tell the projectionist that you're getting close to the point where you need to switch the reels, because they need to be able to do this very quickly, obviously.
Yeah, because you didn't notice when it would switch to the next one, not when people were doing a really good job of it. And I know that there were people that were quite good at it, and it was almost an art in and of
Correct. I
itself.
mean, because what they would do also is they would have two projectors. So, you turn one off and turn the next one right back on. And then you'd switch back and forth between the two, as things were moving along and stuff like that. And then one of Boggs' guys just pushes the projectionist out of the room, and we see them start walking towards Andy, and Andy just looks at them and takes a step backwards as things are starting to get a little dicey here.
Yes, it stuff is escalating
Yes.
and quickly. We went to, and it's interesting too, because you go from a scene where you feel relatively safe. Everybody's laughing, everybody's having a good time. Andy's in a great mood, which we don't see very often. And he's getting something that he wants. We don't know yet what and why exactly. We have our suspicions one way or another as a viewer, and this is a hard right turn. And it's also a really good reminder that you're never safe there.
That's true,
Nowhere
and I
is.
think that's one of the things they're also trying to show us. The fact
Yeah.
that you're there's no place safe for Andy here from the sisters.
No.
As we talked about,
No, he can't let his guard down
that's right.
ever.
As we
Yeah.
talked about, I think 2 weeks ago, the fact that sometimes Andy would win and sometimes he wouldn't. That type of thing. Not a pleasant situation for someone like Andy Dufresne.
Nope. Who has no skill set to physically defend himself in this scenario. And even if he did, 4-on-1 or 3-on-1 is not really a winnable situation unless you're like Jean-Claude Van Damme. And he's definitely not Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Nope.
Can't spin and kick your way out of this one, Andy.
Probably not. He's gonna have to wait like 40 something years till Van Damme would be on screen to show everyone how you do it. So, yeah, and that's how this minute ends, to leave us in more suspense.
Yeah, this is a heavy note to leave this episode on.
Sure. So today's segment is called Midweek Morgan, where my guests will give their top five Morgan Freeman performances. So Heather, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
Okay, this one was really, really hard because I love Morgan Freeman so much. So I did a mix of my favorite and ones that I love for nostalgic reasons, even though they're not necessarily the best movies. My number five is ironically Red. It's so much fun. I love that movie so much. I always try to get people to watch it. My number four is the movie where I really kind of got to know him a little bit better, was, and I watched obsessively. Okay, let's just, we already talked about Dances with Wolves. It's Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. I had a Kevin Costner thing in my young age. I just thought he was great. And then we had that damn Bryan Adams song that haunted us for the whole summer. But Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves is my number
I still
four.
love listening to
My
that
number
song. I
three.
think it's a great song.
I do too. I will never hate it ever. It's great. And I think we all listened to it like thousands of times, bare minimum, whether we wanted to or not. It's a great song. It was a fun movie. Is it great? No, but it was fun. And it was very much so of the
Yes.
time. My number three is the first movie that I recognized him and who he was and bookmarked him in my head, and that was Glory, which I haven't watched in a really long time. So when I was making this list, I really, really want to rewatch it. And I've been reading a lot of historical nonfiction lately too, so it's a good time to go back and revisit for me. My number two is one of my favorite films of all time, and I think is his second best performance. You can argue with me all day long, but it is Seven.
Why does
I
that
love
not
that
surprise
movie.
me that that is your that that's high on your list?
I know. And my number one is Shawshank. I think this is probably his best performance, and it's inarguably one of the best movies ever made. So Yeah.
Okay.
Predictable a bit,
That's
sure,
fine.
but that's my
That's
list.
okay. I will take it. I will take it. All right. Now we will play the daily game. Which daily game you want to start with? I'll let you choose.
Let's do the adaptation one because that one, if I do bad on, then I can at least just have fun with
Okay,
Hilo.
so we will now play Name That Novel Adaptation. So let's spin the wheel and see what you get today.
No whammies, no whammies.
One that you get now is a movie that came out in 2015, and the original title of the novel was The Price of Salt.
Price of Salt, 2015. I haven't heard of the book.
Okay,
And I
it starred
can't, yeah, I can't think of some.
Kate Blanchett.
Oh. Well, that's
And it
interesting. I love Cate
was
Blanchett.
directed by Todd Haynes.
Nope, I don't
And
know.
the answer is Carol.
Oh, no, I didn't know.
Have you ever seen it?
Yep. Nope. So I'm not mad that I missed that one. And I don't even remember it. So off my radar entirely.
Okay. It's an interesting movie. I'm not the biggest Todd Haynes fan, but
Yeah.
it was pretty good. I mean, the three main actresses are all great. Cate Blanchett, Rooney Mara, and Sarah Paulson.
Oh, I do love all of them too.
Yeah, and
Yeah.
it's about a
Don't remember
photographer. It's
it
a
at
photographer
all.
who begins to explore a lesbian relationship in the 50s and how people look at her and stuff
Oh.
like that.
That does sound interesting.
All right, and now we will play the second game of High Low. So let's spin the wheel and see what you get.
I feel like this one is like, whose line is it anyway? Where the stakes are much lower.
All right, the 2016 film Hidden Figures.
Oh, that was good. Okay, I'm not going to say 93%. That was actually my first instinct. I feel like, okay, I'm going to say 91% on Rotten Tomatoes, and I'm going to say this was going to say 8.9 on
Okay, so on
IMDb.
IMDb it's 7.8, and surprisingly, on Rotten Tomatoes, it is 93%. So you should have gone with it.
I literally didn't. That was my first instinct too. I'm like 93%. It was really good. It was really good. All right, but I didn't pick 93% because it's been 93% too many times.
Yes,
That's
it is.
so funny.
All right, let's spin the wheel for the next one. All right, the 1987 film Hope and Glory.
All right. I am going to say 79% fresh, and I'm going to say 7.6 on IMDb.
Okay, so on IMDb it's 7.2, and
What
Rotten Tomatoes it's
the
96. Seriously.
All right. I'm so not getting the hang of it. I'm not doing bad with the IMDb ratings though. I've been consistently like at least in the bubble for the most part.
All right, so let's spin the wheel for your final one today. And who
I'm at
knows,
this
maybe
point I
this
can
one will
just
also be
guess that straight
93%.
across the board.
All right, the 1970 film Love Story.
Oh, I love that movie. Oh my gosh. Okay. I had such a Ryan O'Neal thing
Have you
too.
seen the sequel?
No, I didn't know there was a sequel. Why
There's
is
a
there a
sequel that came
sequel?
out. There's a sequel that came out, I think, in 76 called Oliver's Story, and it's all about him falling in love again with Candace Bergen this time.
Oh, no, I don't
And
want to
how he
see that.
deals with falling in love again. It's
Did
not as good as the original.
Okay, I was just gonna say, should I though? I do like Candace Bergen. Okay. No, I don't want that. No. Love means never having to say you're sorry. Okay.
Exactly.
Okay. I'm going to say, because I'm biased and I love that movie, I am going to say it is 90% fresh. It's probably not. And I am going to say it is a 7.8 on IMDb. I don't think they're going to be
Okay.
as kind to it.
No, neither you overshot both of them by a lot.
I know.
It's a 6.9
Rude.
and 69%.
I knew that it was going to be low on the fresh meter, but I don't care. I, if you're listening, go watch it and cry. I did when I was little. That was it. I
Okay.
also went through a slew of Ryan O'Neal movies because of my mother. And oh, who else too? I find myself on podcasts so often now going, oh, I watched all of these movies because my mom liked this person. So I ended up liking them too. Like my Kevin Costner phase was definitely my mom's Kevin Costner phase also.
Okay, there's nothing wrong with that.
No, it's just really funny now that I find myself saying it so often. It's interesting.
Okay, fair enough. All right, Heather, would you like to once again tell people where they can find you?
You can find me at heatherbaxendale.com. You can find my books there. You can also find my podcast, Word of Hellmouth. It is a Buffy rewatch show where my buddy Mark and I are going through all of the seasons of Buffy, episode by episode, breaking them down and kind of like reflecting on how our young selves perceive them and now us as grown as adults do. We are on season four of Buffy and season one of Angel. And you can also find all of my social media on there. Follow me, do whatever you gotta do.
All right, excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. You can send me an email to moviearoundminute@moviearound.net. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, and you can find me on Instagram. So, until tomorrow, get busy living.
Get busy dying.